Hello, hello, hello. I'm your Rosie O'Donnell, hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz, and welcome to In Yo Mouth!
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood
to lick it right, lick it good, show you how to
look. Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets.
So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo Mouth.
I got the goosebumps. Hey there and welcome back, folks. Once again, I'm your hostess with the mostest, Munoz, and oh, what a day it is. I am super excited for today's episode because I have yet another one of my good gal pals with me, one Joe Paternoster. Say hi to the kids, Joe.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you, Munoz, for having me.
Yes. Well, thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm great. I wish it was a little warmer outside, but...
I mean, it's fucking cold.
It's making me want summer even more.
Just to be scantily clad running through the streets of New York. Well, I thought it would be really exciting to have Joe on the pod today because Joe, and we've talk about this a lot on this podcast for many different reasons, right? Just weight in general, weight and weight loss and gay body dysmorphia and, you know, the whole rundown of it all. It is a food podcast after all. And as gay men, I think we're a little weight upset.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest about it, you know? And Joe had a surgery done, a vertical gastric sleeve
Yes.
So I thought it would be really interesting for the listeners to hear out there just about your journey and what that's all about and what that's like and, you know, the pros, the cons, and what it all means. But before we even get there, Joe, welcome to In Yo Mouth and happy National Chocolate Mint Day.
Ooh, that's a thing?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm with it. I'm all for that.
Yeah? 100%. Chocolate Mint Day. So... here on In Yo Mouth, we celebrate every National Food Day, and it just so happens to be National Chocolate Mint Day.
Put that on my pillow.
Right? Yeah. And Andy's candy.
Yes. That rectangle of goodness.
Yeah, that's good. You know, dip that in my coffee this morning. Hello. I should have, you know what? Had I had more time this morning, I would have picked some up. But
it's also Girl Scout season, so like those Thin Mints, I think they count.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Shout out to the Girl Scouts and our, you know what, for keeping us winter weighty, to say the least.
And helping with that body dysmorphia.
Right. Right. Or just sitting crying over Thin Mints that like you can't lose weight, but yet you've eaten like three boxes of them.
You always keep them in the freezer.
Yes. I was just about to say that.
They have to be in the freezer.
Yes. Folks, if you're not keeping your Thin Mints in the freezer, you are doing it wrong.
The calories don't count if they're frozen. It's like cryogenics of Girl Scout cookies.
Yes. Speaking of weight loss, it's just so on topic today. But before we even move any further, on this day in gay history, in 1974, The Pat Collins Show, a morning program on New York's WCBS, broadcasts live from the Continental Baths. The station only receives one complaint about the episode.
And was it Bette Midler about not getting her good side?
Yeah, probably. Or Barry Manilow just being like...
You didn't credit me.
Yes, honestly, before he was Barry Manilow. Oh my God, could you imagine an entire film crew at the bathhouse?
Oh my God, I wonder if they had to wear towels too.
I've never been to a bathhouse, right?
Yeah, me neither. It's before our time.
You know, there are none in... Well, I don't know. It's another story for another time. Shout out to you, Pat Collins, if you're still alive, and WCBS for, you know... It's the beginning of the trailblazing of the LGBTQ+ movement in media, you know? And funnily enough, I just saw Our Lady J last night, a concert, speaking of like LGBTQ plus people in media. Our Lady J, if you don't know, out there writes for, or wrote for Transparent, writes for Pose, and is a singer-songwriter as well. It was really, really incredible. And she herself talked about
exposure
and what it meant, and, you know, just being denied and what it is now, and that trailblazing. So, you know, it's all really beautiful. I'm here for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Actually, there's actually a show coming out, out on television.
Oh.
Out in media. I think it's an Apple TV thing. I'm going to...
Oh, yeah. It's called Out on Audio... Out on Media,
Out on TV.
Out on something. Yes.
I wonder if they even know that it started, you know, on CBS in a bathhouse.
I believe many things start in a bathhouse, including weight loss. But let's start at the very beginning and let's get to know Joe a little bit. Joe is a native New Yorker.
Absolutely. I grew up in the Bronx.
Yes.
Actually was born in Brooklyn and moved to the Bronx at like 5. So I'm a native New Yorker, and I've been on this little island of Manhattan for the better part of about 11 or 12 years now.
Just 11 or 12 years in Manhattan. Did you ever live outside of the city?
Yes. Well, I went away to college, and then, you know.
Does that really even count?
No, but I did try, like, suburbia, and you know this. I purchased a home on Long Island, and I was like.
I actually forgot.
Yeah.
That the haunted house.
Yeah, you know? And I was like, no, this isn't for me. You know, I work in Brooklyn, and the commute was awful, and I was like, this, I'm not about suburbia. I'd rather be in a building with a super.
So, yeah, right? I mean, you'd rather pay an exorbitant amount of rent than own a home.
For a fraction of the square footage.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's what I'm going to call Manhattan math.
Yeah. It just makes life easier. I mean, debt comes and goes. You just make a little more money, but...
Or you don't, and you just get another credit card.
And I don't need to live in 3 bedrooms. I don't even need a bedroom. Give me a studio.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I live in 120 square feet, so...
And it's perfect. What else do you need?
Well, I have a list of things that I need, but that's not what today is all about. Here on In Your Mouth, the audience knows that I love to celebrate LGBTQIA people and the great things that they do in the workplace, because not everybody can be a Kardashian, nor do we want to be, or, you know, because LGBTQ people in media are like the Billy Porters, are the actors, are the Kardashians, are, even though none of them are LGBTQ, but I think you get what I'm saying. And so we run the gamut here on the podcast, from chefs to our good friend Ray Meal, who's in HR, to, you know, the gamut. So let the kids know what you do and how you are excelling in your field.
So I'm over 15 years in as a special educator in New York City. Now I'm a little more on the administration side of it. But from day one, I worked high school aged special education in the Bronx, dual certified. So I was teaching English to students that were told that they weren't going to be able to do it. And they did it. And funny enough, I'm not a product of New York City public schools. I'm a product of Catholic schools. And that might be where the entire, more so than just body dysmorphia, began. But working in public schools was great. I was always out from the moment I started in public school, in high school. The first time I was asked by a student, I said yes, because they needed a role model. Being in the Bronx, in the teenage years, not having exposure, right? We're still talking about exposure.
Yeah.
So, and it was actually really exciting, nerve-wracking for me, and welcomed by my administration. Like I was actually asked by the principal to always have that honest conversation with the kids.
Wow, that's yeah. Really, really incredible, because that doesn't always happen, as we know. We all saw Hurricane Bianca.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd work in Texas.
And if you didn't see it, shout out to you, Bianca Del Rio.
She's taught me a few things.
It's a cult classic, and we'll leave it at that. But I think that's really beautiful that you were accepted and just able to be out and proud in your field and excel as a gay person.
I co-coordinated the GSA at the time, which is called the Gay Straight Alliance. I'm not sure what they call them in schools now. This is about 12 years ago.
Which is huge. Yeah. Even to think 12 years ago.
I mean, this is before gay marriage. This is like at the beginning of the fight, right? This is like San Francisco allows marriage. Yes. Proposition 8 takes it away. It was the back and forth. It was, you know, it was right. It was before, it was the original inception of Queer Eye for the Straight, you know, Queer Eye before the Netflix special. Now it was the explosion of exposure. So people needed a place to go. And we had a very, very large population of students.
The explosion of exposure. Are we back at the bathhouse? Listen, we have to keep, you know, we get down and dirty here on In Your Mouth, but we got to keep it clean. Yeah. Because we have an educator with us. We want our LGBTQ people excelling in their fields to stay in their field.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. I mean, so we're not going to get Joe in trouble today. Well, hopefully not.
Rule number one, as an educator for myself, has always been to provide a safe space for children, right? So more so, you can't teach a child if they don't feel safe.
Exactly.
So they all get to feel safe. However that looks, you make that happen.
For sure, for sure. And speaking of just being out in the workplace, we love to celebrate people's coming out stories and tell people's coming out stories, because I always say that you never know who's listening, from my 70 listeners in China to, shout out to y'all, to, that's the thing, honey, to someone random who randomly finds my Little Gay Food podcast, who may need to hear these things and may need to hear the stories and need to hear the coming up. And, you know, some of us have great coming out stories. Some of us don't have great coming out stories, and so on and so forth. And would you mind sharing yours?
No. So I think I came out a little late to the game. I was done with college after a 5-year stint of an undergrad.
You took that extra year.
Yeah, you know what? I really liked it there. And I also didn't like to take classes on Fridays.
Wait, but were you on the DL and like college was just...
I lived in a fraternity house. I was the president of the president of my fraternity. I mean, I was doing everything I could try to be to present and show up as a straight guy. You know, we'd have the football parties. I still don't know what goes on when we watch football. So I would just make sure there were wings, right? I would make sure the food spread was good while all the guys watched football. I did everything I could be to not let anybody know my secret.
Yeah. All right.
So,
and that's not easy sometimes.
No. No. So it wasn't until I came home and I was about, I guess, the end of 22, beginning of 23, that I actually came out to a family member and to friends. And it was fine. And it kind of just, you know, it kind of grew from there. Right. It was once one person knows, another person knows. And then there was nothing to hide. And it was kind of my superpower, I guess. Right. Like, however, if we can segue a little bit, as I said, like, I don't think I presented, some people are like, oh, everyone always knew. I think with me, I didn't have the typical facade or body.
This is super important because we haven't even touched on, in the 100 some odd episodes of this podcast, what is called passing.
Yeah.
You know, we may have touched on racially passing, like passing as yes, white, yeah, right? Although you are other, right? But we haven't talked about like passing as straight and passing as, and what that means. And, you know, because there was never a day in my life that I passed.
And for me, there was, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, and I didn't hide behind that. And I actually got to a point, especially in the beginning of coming out, where it was, how dare you assume I'm straight, right? It wasn't acting. It just kind of was who I was. And on top of that, I had some extra pounds, right? I wasn't a gym rat. I wasn't playing or looking the part. And in the beginning, it was kind of cool because I think a lot of other guys were like, oh, you know, I got this like DL guy. And I wasn't DL.
So,
like,
yeah,
I wasn't,
yeah.
You know.
So there's so, well, there's just so much to unpack there, between, looking straight, right? Whatever that means, you know, like what does straight look like? But passing because you had some weight on you, you know,
yeah.
And then the community's obsession with what looking straight is, that leads to the body dysmorphia, that leads to, I mean, this could be like a 4-hour long podcast. Don't worry, y'all. It's not going to be 4 hours. We're going to keep it to the strict 45.
I mean, I'm really glad that we're here together right now, because I think, were you with me when I got my nose pierced? Like,
yes.
In the middle, like, and that was actually something that I was probably at the heaviest of my weight. And I was like, I need something to make me look less straight, right? So it was like the middle of the night. I was like, Munoz, let's go get my nose pierced.
I forgot about that. The amount of people I've taken to get things pierced. if I had a dollar, they could sponsor this podcast. but I completely forgot about that. I remember, and I was like, are you sure you really want to do this? And you're like, yes, we're going.
We're going.
And I was like, all right, let's do it. But just in speaking about the weight, everybody has something they don't like about their bodies. A lot of people, myself included, have weight issues and our weight fluctuates all the time. Has this been a constant struggle? And where do you think that came from?
A sedentary lifestyle, right? I wasn't into sports. I grew up in an Italian household where food was everything. You know, a New York-based Italian household, food was everything. Yeah. I grew up with, like, you're not getting up until you finish your plate. And then I couldn't imagine getting up without finishing my plate my entire life.
Yeah. I still can't get up without finishing
100%. Why would you waste the food?
There are starving children in Africa.
And I was never one of them.
No. Why was that the excuse?
Yeah, I did, like, whatever.
It's not like our parents were packing up
the leftover pasta
to send to Africa.
No. So it was guilt. So I ate. I mean, and here, listen, to this day now, I'm about to be 40 years old. Had, you know, up and downs with my weight. I'm still 150% a foodie. I like food. I like to eat. I like different flavors. I like sweet. I like savory. I love to cook. And I get excited by it. And it was something that was easy. I don't throw the word addiction around lightly. But I don't know if I had one or not, but there can be food addictions. And different than any other addiction, you need food to live. So you're asked to not touch something or abstain from something that you actually need to get through life.
Yeah.
So then it's a control issue about how much you can actually stop. Self-control. The self-control around how much you eat and the right choices you make. And I made a lot of the wrong ones. And it also, the closeted stage wasn't helping. It was like, maybe subconsciously, if I kept the pounds on, nobody would know my secret, right?
Wow, that's real.
And then when I was ready to not have a secret anymore, and you're a little bit older, weight doesn't come off as easy.
Who you telling?
Right.
So, and then you're thrust into this world because, like, you finally got the monkey off your back, and you're thrust into this world of men in Speedos with abs and men in thongs dancing on bars with abs and photos, every photo you see of an advertisement for a gay party is men making out with their abs. Everybody had abs. I mean, you know who didn't have abs?
Me and you.
And me.
Yeah, I mean, everybody had a six pack. I had a keg. That's how it worked out. That was the thing. And you've known me for years.
Mm-hmm.
And
not 4 years, but no, for many
years. For many, 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 many years. A lady won't say how, you know, we met as children, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So
little gabies.
I was a big gaby.
Are gabies things you find at bathhouses?
I don't
just strewn all over the floor.
I think those are scabies.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Wait, can scabies live in the heat? I don't know. Yeah, That's another subject for another time.
The towels.
But it's so hot in there, ooh. I've heard.
Oh, so yeah. All of a sudden, I don't have an appetite. the weight, like I was saying about my weight, it was something I struggled with my entire life. Never thought I could actually be the size I wanted. I went to the gym. I did the diets. I did everything. But I had a hunger, right? I had a hunger. And my mind, if I worked out a lot, I could eat more, which is stupid. I mean, however, you can never out-train a diet, right?
You can't out-train the diet, even though all those Instagram models, you see them all eating pizza.
Pizza was the go-to I was thinking about. Like, if I could do an extra hour at the gym, I can have 3 extra slices of pizza. It doesn't work like that. Right? Oh, math is not my thing.
And we live in New York. Some of the best pizza. I mean, have you had pizza? Sidebar. have you had that Detroit pizza that's down on 23rd Street?
No, but I think I know where we're going after this podcast.
It's fucking delicious. It's so good.
And it's not even about like the having the best pizza. New York has such access to pizza. Like, oh, yeah. Even the shitty pizza that's a dollar at 2:30 in the morning, right? Like, it's whatever. It's pizza.
Yeah.
So who says no to pizza? Anyway.
Vegans. Right?
Not a life I could live.
Vegans and those with celiacs.
Oh,
shout out to you.
God.
Right? Because vegan... gluten-free pizza will never,
no,
unfortunately. And I'm on your side, vegans and celiacs, folks. But
it's never one of those things like, you know what I feel like right now? No, 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 no.
No.
Please,
no.
Please keep the gluten in my muffin.
Yes. Well, well. Don't mind if I do. Why don't you come up and keep the gluten in my muffin?
Oh, this is more fun than I thought it was going to be. So, I mean, and then when you were doing, prior to the food podcast and you were doing the food blog, I mean, you're still an amazing chef. And I was one of the people that loved to come over and be at all your taste testings.
Mm-hmm,
I still need to get back to some of those.
Yeah. She doesn't cook very much this. Yeah. But the journey's just interesting, and the journey with our bodies and the way we feel and the way we perceive ourselves in the mirror to the way the world looks at us is just ever so interesting. Like, I'm at a point right now where I hate going to the gym, and I try, you know, but the clothes don't fit, and I'm living my life in joggers and stretch pants.
God, I know every word to that song.
Right? I mean, it's just an interesting journey and thing to think about. And I just don't understand why we do it to ourselves, you know, because we know the outside world is affecting us, right? We know that, oh, well, that's fake and airbrushed. And we know that that man is probably only eating dry chicken and broccoli, or maybe some of them out there are doing the drugs to get the bodies, right?
Absolutely.
And, you know, no one wants a small penis. That's what the drugs do to you, y'all.
And I also, my other question was always, I mean, I made a million excuses on why I couldn't be skinnier. And my thing was like, all those people in the gym, do they have jobs? They're there all day long.
All day
right?
long.
All day long. And I'm like, I'm at a place called work, right? So when do I go? Do I go early in the morning? I have to be at work by 7:30. Doesn't really happen that
much.
So
that means you would have to get up at like 3:34,
yeah, no.
Get to the gym, shower, get to work,
and function. Or the opposite, which is unfortunately the life I live, where it's after work. And, you know, I know that on paper my job's until 3:30, 4 o'clock, but that's not the case. I get home from work 6. I'm there at 7:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock. I had to actually make a choice to put myself first. And that's kind of how this journey kind of went, where I started doing some self-help work, and it wasn't even about my weight. It was about relationships. It was just kind of about me. And I realized that I couldn't be an asset to the world without taking care of myself first.
Yeah. And I think that's really important for people to hear, just because I don't think we think about putting ourselves first a lot, you know?
And there's a reason that on a plane, they tell you to put the mask on yourself first rather than the person next to you, because a dead body can't help the person next to them.
Exactly.
Right, so you give yourself the oxygen before you give.
Was that my stomach?
That was your stomach.
I wonder if the microphones picked that up.
I picked it up. Yeah, so that's the there's nothing wrong with helping yourself first. It doesn't. You actually are enough to help yourself and others. And there's nothing cute about martyrdom, right? You know what martyrs have in common? They're dead.
Yeah.
And that's not cute.
Yeah, get off the cross.
Everything I did for everyone else.
Yeah.
You can't do anything for anybody else unless you are okay.
Yeah, right?
So that's where it kind of started. So I tried. I did every diet in the world, and I paid thousands and thousands of dollars. Like, I can go through a quick synopsis. I did one where I went to this like chiropractor and he taped ball bearings behind my ears, and you had to like rub the little things behind your ears, and it was supposed to make you not hungry. I was starving. And then for 2 days you could have like just vegetables, and then like the other 2 days dairy. I was starving. So yeah, I did this other diet. I had to switch up food, and I had to drink like special water with a pill that dissolved in it. I mean, I did every fad diet you could ever do. I tried Atkins, but I like bread. And by the time keto came around, I'd already been on this new journey. So what I eventually did was, after the gym and the diets and everything didn't work, I was like, I need to do something that's going to work. I'm insane. If I keep trying to do the same thing over and over again and keep having the same outcome and nothing's changing, that's insanity. So I decided to go the route of a gastric sleeve. I was referred to a doctor at NYU Langone by Tyler Whitman of Million Dollar Listing.
Oh, yeah. Because
he and I have a very similar journey. We actually worked out together when we were both very fat. So if you know New York's Million Dollar Listing, Tyler Whitman, thank you. Thank you, Tyler.
Yes. You see, here on In Your Mouth, we know people that know people.
And I get to say, I knew them. I knew us when we were both fat, right? So... and I actually told Tyler I'd be mentioning him.
Oh, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully Tyler. Tyler's like, okay.
Oh, no. He's been totally, totally open with his journey on television. And he made the referral to me to – he referred me to the doctor that ended up changing and saving my life. And to this day, I mean, he's 3 years out. I'm over 2 years out of the surgery. And I'll still send him a random text like, hey, how do you feel when you eat this? At this point, we're both kind of in the same boat where 2.5 years post-surgery, there's zero remnants left other than a smaller stomach. There's nothing I can't eat. There's nothing – I can eat a lot more. I can't eat as much as I could, but I could – now it's choice-based, right? Yeah. It's 100% choice-based. But that's what happened. So Tyler and I were both chugging along at the gym. He did this change. I was inspired. I reached out to him. He referred me to his surgeon. And it's been the best choice of my life.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I want to hear more about this. But I want to take a quick break from this story and from the journey just to give the listeners their favorite part and my favorite part of the pod, a little bit of, are you ready, Jill?
I'm ready.
Food news update.
Food
news
update. Food news.
Ooh, honey, you ain't ready.
Girl, spill the tea. DoorDash teamed up with a famous tattoo artist to turn people's tattoos of exes into food.
Get out! That is awesome. So every time I like look at the Klondike bar on my arm, it just reminds me of happiness and like a polar bear rather than an awful ex.
Yes, pretty much. So this is obviously this is the podcast that comes out right after Valentine's Day, and I just thought this was really hysterical that DoorDash did this. They had this contest for you to post your a picture of your tattoo of your ex's name and tell them what food you would replace it with why.
Do they bring it to your door then, like the food? Like
no, they legit fly you out. They flew three people out to LA to work with a tattoo street artist, Mr. Cartoon, a.k.a. Mark Machado. Shout out to you, Latinos in the house. Oh. And he who helped alter the tattoo regrets. Machado has tattooed some of your favorite celebs like Kobe Bryant, Beyonce, Eminem, and Travis Scott, to name a few. So how funny is that?
I mean, listen, it's going to go full circle right now, but I would never regret having a tattoo of pizza. Right? Like,
yeah.
I would totally replace somebody with a slice of pizza.
And that is a metaphor for life. You are expendable and replaceable by a slice of pizza. Well, the tattoo transformations, speaking of pizza, involved pizza and sushi, breakfast foods, and a bowl of Hungarian cherry soup for a woman whose Hungarian ex left her to go back to Hungary.
Wow. Wow. I mean, and is that just one person? Like, did they have a whole like Thanksgiving dinner of food on their back for all the exes, or is this like
no? They did three or four people.
That's amazing.
Thank you, Delish.com, for this article where we get all the best food news.
Wow.
Well, I know. You know what? I have a drunken tattoo that I like that I don't love because it's a drunken tattoo that I've considered getting fixed. But a piece of me is like, oh well, that's a cute little memory.
Would you cover it with food?
Probably.
Yeah,
I mean,
why not?
It's on my wrist.
I mean, I'm not talking about like dropping French fries on it. I mean, like just really covering it, like tattooing food.
Oh,
like no, not extra spaghetti sauce on your wrist. I'm talking about, would you actually cover it with food? Yeah.
It's like my Tom Ford fragrance, you know, pepperoni. Well, shout out to you, DoorDash. I love this idea.
And shout out to the woman with the Hungarian cherry pie.
No, a Hungarian cherry soup.
Cherry soup.
Yeah,
that's a thing. Wow.
What? I mean.
All right, I need you to make that.
Yeah, gotta figure that out. A lizard drowned in this guy's beer, so he performed mouth to mouth on it.
Doesn't that just like increase the blood alcohol content? Like he basically blew a breathalyzer into a dead lizard.
Yeah, but he saved the lizard's life.
Did the lizard live?
Yeah, spoiler alert, the lizard lives.
Oh my god. Oh, did they have to like detox him slowly? Like did he have to give him like little capfuls, thimbles of beer every day until he was like weaned off of it?
Maybe.
Oh my
god. So, another article from Delish.com. The man who goes by Slab, according to the Daily Mail, was out with a few friends at the Amble Inn in Corvindy Beach in Australia. He left the table to go have a smoke, and lo and behold, a gecko fell in his beer. He came back and was like, "Who put this gecko in my beer?" And they were like, "No, it fell from the tree.
The gecko drank my beer."
Yeah. The dingo ate your baby. And so he decided to perform CPR by taking his index finger and pressing lightly on its little chest.
Oh.
And then gave it mouth to mouth, and it came back to life.
I bet you that wasn't that gecko's first time. I bet you that gecko like runs a racket. He's drinking all the beer, making out with all the boys. Every day, he's like a viral YouTube star. That gecko.
Gecko vibes.
Yeah,
that
gecko,
you know,
is
what?
Doing it.
I want to drown in some hot man's beer and have him give me mouth to mouth.
I wonder if that gecko had insurance.
Joe's got all the jokes today, yes. I wonder if it was like an IPA or a stout. You know, how thick was this beer? Was it like a Guinness?
Oh, my God. I mean, like...
Or was it like a light beer?
I wonder if it was like one of those like chameleon-type geckos that like changed color, the color of the beer it landed in. Like, did he pull him out and he was like an amber hue?
Well... Folks out there, if you want to see this man save this gecko's life, there's a video on the Daily Mail's website. And you know what?
You know,
that's a little good news for this.
I've heard of people drinking beer and like having to go bleed the lizard, but I've never heard of someone like saving the lizard.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, a little bit of humanity goes a long way.
Geckos matter.
Multiple Wendy's employees were fired after posting a video of someone taking a bath in the sink.
What? The person took a bath in the sink at Wendy's. Was it an employee? I have so many questions.
So this happened at a Wendy's in Greenville, Michigan.
So was it a employee that was filmed by other employees taking a bath? Was chili involved? Were there any Wendy's chili involved?
No, no, no.
Frosty? I mean, there are things at Wendy's that literally I would probably think about taking a bath in.
Yes.
Sink.
This skinny boy got into their power soak sink and let it run.
Oh,
so the amount of chemicals on this man's body, this boy's body, are worrisome to begin with. But
oh my God.
It's a 23-second video, and he's quoted saying, "It feels like a hot tub."
Except it like burns the flesh off of you. That's not a hot tub. That's not a hot tub, Michigan.
Who knows? Maybe he needed a bath.
That sounds like a prison shower.
Apparently, you and I have very different ideas of what a prism shower sounds like or looks like. Obviously, the entire internet had a meltdown about it because it's a Wendy's and someone's taking a bath. But this is what I'm going to say about this. The man was in a sink with a bunch of sanitizer. Like, nothing's going to get infected. There's not going to be a pube in your in your burger.
I mean, I've worked in restaurants where, like, people, you know, a lot of chefs wear Crocs and you throw them through the dishwasher. That's one of the best parts of wearing Crocs as cooking shoes, is that they can get sanitized there. But I have a very, very important question related to the story. If 23 employees were fired, who's running the drive-thru at that Wendy's right now?
Not 23. There was just a handful of employees fired. Delish contacted Team Schostack Family Restaurants, sorry, I just butchered that name, which owns 56 Wendy's locations, including the Wendy's in question, and they issued this statement. This egregious behavior is completely unacceptable and counter to our safety, training, and operational standards. Upon learning of this situation, all employees in the video were terminated immediately, and the restaurant was completely sanitized. The health department visited, and the restaurant has no violations that were reported.
I mean, they took employees must wash hands to a whole new level.
Right. But you know what? Like, let's talk about, like, the systemic societal effects. Let's get deep about this.
Okay.
And what if, like, you know, this is a poor area, Greenville, and the man needed a bath?
Like, he needed to be scrubbed down.
Like,
I mean, he wanted to wash
everything.
Like, legit.
Like, what if, this is a very poor area, and this is his only job now? He got fired. But this is not the case,
I mean,
folks. I'm being really dumb here.
No,
this
but
is
you're
not,
right.
This is not the case at all. With this child was being stupid.
But nobody was harmed.
You know? Yeah, I know, but the sanitariness of it all, I get it, but I was just like,
I'd much rather hear about somebody jumping in the dishwasher at a restaurant than someone fucking with my food at a restaurant.
Yeah, you know
like, so
there's tons of those stories. I have them myself.
Yeah.
So, well, you know what? Shout out to the Wendy's hot tub.
I mean, if so many people filmed it, it has to be online. We have to be able to
find it. Yeah, it is. It's somewhere you can watch it. It's on TikTok. And I think that's a great way to end. Food news update. Yes. You know, just a little joy.
That was amazing.
Amidst some gastric sleeve
realness.
Talk. Yeah, gastric. You know what? Like,
yeah. So we want to go back to the gastric sleeve.
To the gastric sleeve.
So I had the sleeve done in October of 2017.
Yeah.
And as soon as I was cleared, I was back at the gym. And So I like to go to, like, boutique classes. I'm not somebody to this day that can go to the gym and work out on his own. I start sweating and I'm like, woohoo, I worked out.
It's very New York. I like to go to boutique classes. I just can't if there isn't, like, a special.
I just need somebody to yell at me for an hour.
If they don't call my name out at the Peloton class by my, like, user handle, Sparkly Poops, I just can't. I just don't feel like I work out.
Okay, exactly. Everything he just said. But
it's very New York.
Even before I started the gym, and years before I started the surgery, I was like, I'm going to start running. And I literally paid someone to yell at me to run up and down hills in Central Park. Because I the second I sweat, I'm like, oh, I must have worked out. So I went back to a gym that I had successfully lost weight, however not long term, prior to the surgery. So I did they were 6-week courses. I did 3 back-to-back plus in-betweens. It was a full 6 months.
So wait, let's pause a minute here, because from point of surgery to point of being able to work out again, how much weight, if I may ask, did you lose?
So at my heaviest, I was 270 pounds.
Okay.
And I'm short, so that shape is just round. Then at the day of surgery, I was about 250. I think I had hit about 200 pounds by the point I was able to start working out. It had nothing to do with weight loss. It had to do with stitches being healed.
Mm-hmm.
Not popping my gut, right?
Of course.
Not reopening the wound. Because there's a lot of internal healing. What I learned is that first year, the scar tissue inside the sleeve is one of the best things that keeps you not hungry. Also, inside your gut, the enzyme ghrelin is developed. And that's the chemical that sends a message to your brain that you're hungry. And by stifling that, you're not hungry. So, and I wasn't hungry for a year. It was very different. That growling stomach that you just had, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't have that. I would remember I was hungry if I got up quick and was a little bit dizzy. And I was like, oh, time to have a yogurt, right?
Yeah.
And I hated yogurt. I always hated yogurt. And it became like a staple of my life. Like, I think if it looks like pudding, it should taste like pudding. which yogurt does not.
The chill of chocolate for pudding. Wait, we can't talk about him. Strike that from the record.
So I went to the gym and I ate. I wasn't that hungry, but I ate healthy. I made very healthy choices. And I went down from my highest as being 270 to 159. I mean, and 159, listen, it was an hour. It wasn't like more than an hour that I weighed 159. Mm-hmm. And I went down to a size 29 waist. And I think at my heaviest, I was like a 46. Mm-hmm. So a 29 waist, I'm finally almost having this gay body that I always dreamed of, right? However, let's talk about the dysmorphia. That part doesn't go away like the hunger. So on paper, because there's like some crazy... this crazy chart made 100 years ago about what your body mass should be, your body mass index, which honestly, doing some research, is founded in racism, believe it or not. Well, I mean, not that that's hard to believe, but it is founded in this way of like denying people health insurance because people have different bodies. And at my height, my goal weight was supposed to be 145. So guess what? On paper, I was always fat. I had gone from being 270 pounds to 159 pounds with a 29-inch waist.
And even still with the gay body dysmorphia of it all, right? Like, you've just lost a whole lot of weight,
yeah,
right? And so there's, like, your skin needs to come back to what it is, right? Because, like, skin stretches, yeah, expands and detracts and so on and so forth. And are you still looking like these posters?
No.
Listen, I have had abs and not had abs. And even with the abs, I still was like, I still don't look like that, yeah, you know?
And I won't. I mean, I get to at some point have a tummy tuck. However, because the way weight loss is, you lose a lot and then your body always tries to fight for some of it back. So I've gained a little. I'm nowhere near where I was. And I'm still happily well below 200 pounds. However, I'd like to get my summer body ready again. I mean, I got comfortable. Unfortunately, I had a hernia, so I had a little bit of a setback with the gym. But I mean, who am I lying to? I already told you, you can't out-train a diet, right?
Yeah.
So I'm a foodie. I've always been a foodie. I like sweet things. So, and like I said, and like how Tyler and I have discussed, there's no long-term effects at this point. So now it's like choices. It's all in the choices. Like, have the grilled chicken. Limit your alcohol.
Were there? Oh, yeah, please.
Yeah, I mean, that's, believe it or not, that's the hardest.
That's the hardest, especially being gay in this city, right?
The when sugar content.
When everything is socializing.
Besides the weight loss and feeling better, I was diabetic. At my heaviest weight, I was diabetic. I was taking metformin twice a day. I was on my way to taking insulin. Through this surgery and working out and making those choices, I'm not even pre-diabetic anymore. I haven't been on medication since the surgery. And for 2 months post-surgery, I would have to take my blood sugar every other day to make sure I wasn't at a certain level, and I haven't been.
That's incredible. Yeah. But what I wanted to ask you about was like side effects and things like that. Because there's, upon researching, there's all sorts of like crazy information. I fell down a WebMD hole and all these like...
Did you watch the video of the surgery?
No, I did not.
Oh my God. Basically, I'll just explain the surgery very quickly. Your stomach is about the size of a football from the points of the football being top and bottom. And what they do is they take this thing...
What you're saying is your stomach is inversible.
What's that? Say it one more time. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I'll just say right. Yeah. So point top to bottom, your stomach looks like a football. They take this thing that looks like a curling iron that goes up and puts 3 rows of stitches on both sides of the stomach and then sears it in the middle. And then they pull out through your belly button the larger portion of your stomach, leaving the remaining stomach that once looked like a football that now looks like a banana. There is where you have the name sleeve. So my stomach was shaped from a football to a sleeve or as a long banana.
And Lord knows we enjoy a long banana.
Not so much football. So
it depends. Well,
so the side effects were coming back, like coming back to eating after. So I had to be on a 2-week liquid only diet to prepare my stomach and make sure there was nothing inside of it when I had the surgery. Going forward, I had to thin out those shakes that I was, those protein shakes that I was drinking, and just have liquids. And again, protein shakes, no food. After 2 weeks post-surgery, I was allowed to introduce soft foods like soups, like tomato soups, and scrambled eggs. And think right away the things that are soft foods like mashed potatoes. You don't want mashed potatoes if you're trying to not be fat. Ice cream. You don't want ice cream if you're trying to not be fat. So you have to like really think of these mushy type foods that you can have.
That's insane. Like just thinking about all the work that goes into this and the amount of sacrifice you have to make this happen for yourself, because you're focusing on yourself and you want to be better, and it's not about you know, there's a tiny piece of it that's like for vanity's sake, but the rest of it is about self-care. And like you said, you were almost like full-on diabetic, and taking care of your mind and your body, that's a major sacrifices and a lot of hard work. Listeners, I'm sure you're out there hearing, like, the amount of work that just goes into having this surgery is just, it's no circus.
Well, to be approved, you need to be on a 6-month monitor, right? So I was monitored monthly. I had to get checked in and show that I was on some sort of weight program and that I was working towards it. And some months, I gained weight. And my surgeon said, that's all mental. Like, it's called, like, the Last Supper summer, right? Like, it was a fear in me. Like, what if I can never have a burger from Shake Shack again? Because I'll always be the fat guy, right? I'll always mentally in my mind. And I wish I'd worked on my mental and mind part a little bit more than the physical and the body part. Because to this day, I still see myself as a lot bigger than I am. And I think I always will until I can get to a place that I don't, right? So I can keep working on that. Hopefully, one day everything will catch up. My stomach, my shape, my waist, my mind.
Well, I think I think that's also important for people out there to hear, is that it's the journey. It's the self-love journey, right? Mm-hmm. And that means mind, body, heart, and soul. And the things we do to create that self-love. And sometimes that's hard.
Yeah.
No matter how big you are, if you have abs, don't have abs, you know, tiny, small, short. Yeah. You know, whatever. It's that journey and the constant having to work on it and work on ourselves, right? Yeah. To then project outward what we're feeling inside, you know, the best possible us.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, you know, not unfortunately, I'm very grateful for the surgery I had, but I kind of thought at some point that, oh, skinny's going to get me to that, right? And I'll be fine. And skinny doesn't last forever, and those choices I had to learn the hard way, gaining a few pounds back, that like the my surgery was a tool. It wasn't a long-lasting effect. It was a tool that actually dulls after a while. So I'm back to, and I also don't want to hate food. I don't want to hate food. I live in New York City. And as you get older, and like I said earlier, there's a lot of calories in drinking. You have dinner parties. You go out to dinner with friends. You can have food of all 7 continents in this tiny little island we live in. And it's some of the best food on the planet. And there's a mental hang up on like me, on any of us that try to deny ourselves something that makes us happy. But you can make smart choices, and you can also have self-control, right? After this podcast, you and I can go get coffee and have a cookie at Schmackery's, but I can have 1 cookie. I don't need to have 4. Right, like
those are really big cookies.
Maybe we'll split a cookie.
Those are like 2.5 cookies in one.
But,
you know,
but at a time, I need. There was a time in life where I needed to try every one that was on the counter.
Yeah,
right. I know. So that I choose one. Right?
Yeah. And you know, I think hearing your story and hearing the journey, and it's so inspiring. Just hearing the coming up of. And through the journey of self-love is what this is wrapping up to be. And you wanted to love yourself more in a different way. And you needed to do these steps and take these steps and make these sacrifices, because you saw that other things weren't working. And that's beautiful. And the journey continues. The journey wasn't over. This wasn't an end all be all. And I think that's what the audience needs to hear, that if this is a consideration out there for you, if this is something you were ever thinking about, right, you have to really think about, are you committed to the journey, whether it's the gastric bypass, this vertical sleeve.
There's a lap band.
There's so many.
There's a million of them.
Bariatric surgeries. And there's a million of them out there that come with a million risks. All right. Just in knowing Joe for as long as I've known Joe, right, I haven't really delved into what this surgery, you know, is and what it entails. And in researching just to talk to him today, you fall down a very crazy hole of just like, these are the risks and this is what's great and this is what can go wrong and this is, you know?
Well, anytime they're going to cut you open, there's a risk of death, right? No matter what it is, there's always a risk of death. That's number one. Number two, a lot of people, there's a shame around even needing it and being like, oh my God, I got to this, or wanting it. I got to this point and there's no going back and I couldn't do it and I failed. No. You didn't fail by saving your own life. You didn't fail by choosing you and actually having the outcome you wanted. You may have had a failed attempts at getting to where you wanted to go, but there's no cheating. There's no cheating in this. There are some people that don't want anybody to know they had the sleeve. They tell people, you know, they just got, you know, that the diet worked for them, the gym worked for them, and they got a trainer, and that's their prerogative. But for me, in the same way as I came out to my students, if I can help somebody, I will be open and honest and tell them exactly what I did. And sometimes I'll make light of it. I'll tell people I lost a lot of weight and they're like, well, how'd you do it? And I'll say, my go-to answer is I had my stomach ripped out through my belly button, which is kind of what happened. But I could have not had any success.
Cause that's not graphic at all. You know,
I could have had no success with this because I could still went home and saw food is ice cream and mashed potatoes. And I could have done that. And I didn't. And I hate the word journey, but no journey ever really ends as long as you have a heartbeat in your chest, right? You always have another day to make yourself a little better, 100% better than yesterday, or 1% better than yesterday. Yeah, just keep going. Make a different choice. Or fall down, make a million mistakes, and then make a choice to get back up and choose again. You're never too far down the rabbit hole as long as you're alive.
When did this become the Oprah Winfrey show?
Girl, I'm good.
This has been so great and a lot of fun just to kiki with you and talk about your journey and kind of educate myself about this specific topic.
Yeah.
And, you know, just get to know you through this way, because I've had a lot of friends on this podcast and I always find it really, really interesting to learn something new about people I've known for so long, because you never know everybody wholly, no matter how long you've known them, you know? So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for sharing your story.
If you want to know more about this, please go out there, talk to your doctors. You know, I always say I love to play doctor, but I am not one. Please go consult somebody if this is what you're thinking, and then go consult somebody else, right? Go get a second opinion. Yeah. And
choose what's right for you.
Yeah.
Choose what's right for you.
Exactly.
Life is not one size fits all, right? Starting with that stupid body mass index chart.
Well, do you want the kids out there to find you? Do you want to give them their socials?
Sure. It's at the.joe.pat on Instagram. And start there.
Perfect. He would be a better source of somebody to talk to than I would about this, like kind of to maybe guide you in the right direction if this is something you're thinking about or if you have more questions. As always, if you want to send me some love, you can hit me up at InYoMouthPod on Instagram and Twitter, and send me love notes at InYoMouthNYC@gmail.com. And if you hated this, you know where to send your mail, at the Bianca Del Rio. One more time, big shout out to Joe Paternoster. Thank you so much. This has been so great. And as I always say to my listeners out there, with you, I'd be nothing. So thank you for listening to In Your Mouth. Yeah.